It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed at the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had a $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John Graney.
Good morning, Larry Lexo. How are you doing today?
Well, it's nice of you to come back. Oh, no, that's right. I was gone.
You're the one on vacation.
Yeah. But I came back.
Well, if you were gone, lots
time.
Happened.
What's happened?
We almost had a nuclear war. So I'm glad you came back. You seem to bring peace to the universe.
Well, I was on the beach, so it was nice.
Yeah. Well, we were all wondering if bombs are going to be fired in North Korea.
But there's going to be some place to come back to.
It seemed like common sense for now has prevailed.
For now.
But folks, thanks for listening. As you know, this is the Financial Cafe, where you grab a cup of coffee and listen to some common sense financial advice information. And August, kids are back in school, which is why I seem so perky and happy today.
You did seem quite up today, John.
Yes. Yesterday we got to drop them off, and it was just a big smile on the face.
You closed the door, and that was that.
Pretty much.
See you later, kids, maybe.
But August is our credit month. We had a show on credit score, how all that worked, and Larry shared his infinite wisdom. And then last week, since you were on the beach with a drink with an umbrella, we did a replay of Rob Pickerel's SBA lending episode, which was back, we did that back in April of last year. And now you brought a guest in today.
I did. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
Wonderful.
Good. Give us a little introduction as to who you are and what you do.
Well, I am Jody Talek, and I'm a mortgage consultant for New American Funding. I've been helping people achieve the dream of home ownership for over 30 years. I was in the banking industry for 17 years, and then I went to mortgage lending. And been there for 20 years at different companies, but I've been with New American Funding for the last 2 years. And we have several offices in the Metro East, but I'm in the Swansea, Illinois office. So I can help people refinance to save money and turn bad debt into good, or I can help people buy a home, which is my favorite thing to do.
That's awesome, because there are not many people that I know who can afford a home without a mortgage. Just one of those things that kind of goes along with it. And you mentioned good debt and bad debt. That's a theme we talk about here, because mortgages, and in our opinion, for as we know what that's worth, that a mortgage is a good debt because, again, you can spread it out over a long period of time. The interest is deductible. And as I said, most people can't afford to buy a house without one. Bad debt, of course, credit cards, bad credit card debt.
Yes.
So it's a way of, as you mentioned, turning that bad debt into good debt, possibly with a refinance or equity loan or whatever. And we'll get much more into that. I have to mention also, of course, we are underwritten by The Chef Shop. Nancy and Scott Snyder from The Chef Shop are have been our underwriter for the past year. They haven't figured it out yet, John, but they keep coming back and paying the bills for us, I know.
I think it's because of all the coffee and stuff we buy.
Well, it is probably because, well, we support them in coffee, fudge, and popcorn, you know, all of the above.
And my daughter and all of her cooking ware.
Yes, definitely. And I haven't been over there since I've been back from vacation. Of course, it's only been a few days, but they're going to be having their green egg demonstration coming up here. So
I cannot wait for that.
Yeah, I'm sure you're going to be there.
I'm going to make sure my wife is there so she can really see the full value of an egg.
Of allowing you to get a green egg? Is that what we're saying?
So I can become an egghead.
You can become an egghead. Yeah,
absolutely. Just like my brother.
Among other things, but
I can be excellent.
This is going downhill fast. But you can find The Chef Shop located at 2320 Troy Road here in Edwardsville or in the Schnucks Plaza, right next to Target. They have a wonderful variety of kitchen goodies, more things than I think I could ever figure out how to use. Their phone number is 618-659-9840. Go by and see them. They're there 7 days a week, and Nancy or Scott or one of their most helpful members of the team, because they are a team, would be happy to help you find whatever you need. Now that kids are back in school, if you have some festivities coming up, whether it's an anniversary, birthday, whatever it happens to be.
The holidays are not far away.
Yeah, tell me about it.
And like I mentioned before on the show, my brother has an egg, and he is a complete egghead. And we were down there for Thanksgiving, and he did a turkey in it. And how quickly it was done and how delicious it tasted was amazing. For that alone. So if you're out there and you're contemplating an egg, this would be a good little training seminar to go to, learn more about it. And with the holidays coming up, it makes it a lot easier.
They're into big planning. They started Christmas planning in July, so a little early for my blood, but you know, they got things going. A lot of the inventory is already on the way in. So stop by the Chef Shop, visit with Scott, Nancy, tell them that you did hear us on the radio at WSIE FM 88.7, The Sound on the campus.
And make your barbecue extraordinary.
Extraordinary barbecue. He is going there. All right, John, what stories do you have for us this morning?
Yes, in the market, I have three stories that I found interesting. They're kind of interrelated, and I have a really good story for the strange news stories indeed.
Okay.
I didn't know they made that denomination of a bill, but sure. Are you familiar with Rule 55, Larry Lexo?
No.
It's not a speed limit.
I'll have to say, it is a speed limit sometimes.
Did you know that with your 401k, you can take a withdrawal before 59 and a half?
That I did know.
And it's called Rule 55.
I didn't know it was called that, but I did know that.
Yes, it's called Rule 55. For IRAs, 401ks, your qualified retirement accounts, if you take money out before the before you turn 59 and a half, you can be hit with a 10% penalty. But there is they call it a loophole. I don't know if it's a loophole, but there is a provision where you can actually start taking money out of those accounts at age 55. Not that we would suggest that, but you have to take out when you take the money out, it has to be in the year that you turn 55. You have to be retired or away from the company the year you turn 55. So if you separated from service at 53, you're not eligible for Rule 55. So if it happens in that year and the payments have to be equal across those 5 years. So once you start, you're in it. And we obviously would recommend not doing that because not very many people can retire at 55, let alone 59 and a half. I would say the majority of us out there are not that fortunate, and you don't want to be hitting those accounts and dwindling your retirement savings 10 years prior to normal retirement age.
That is a little bit early. I think that's also called a Section 72T distribution of substantially equal and periodic payments.
He is such a know-it-all. But he didn't know what Rule 55 was. Yeah, so folks, I got him on that one.
I think you made it up.
Right there. It says right there. Rule
55. Yeah. It's on the internet.
It's highlighted.
It's on the internet. Must be right.
All right. So story number two. Didn't see this one coming. Social Security needs more money or benefits will be cut.
Yeah, imagine that.
Now, here's what I love about the government. They created a problem. Their solution to the problem is twofold, and it involves them. Either we have to cut benefits or we have to raise taxes.
Imagine that.
There's no other solutions out there, like maybe privatizing it, not having it invested in treasury bills that can't keep up with inflation. So you think about it, this system, Social Security, has been around for a long time, and it has been invested in treasuries, which right now are maybe 2%.
I doubt it.
I think, let's call it 2%.
Yep.
But if you would have had these investments in a diversified bond portfolio, you could, especially over the long term, earn somewhere between 5 and 8%.
Mm, no doubt.
But that option didn't show up in the study done by the trustees of the Social Security system.
Yeah. Well, it's always easier to go back to the taxpayer and say, just pay us more. You know, it's you've only been paying into this for your entire life, for many of us or most of us. But it's not enough, so therefore we can't manage the money, so you're going to have to pay more.
Yeah, so they want to raise the taxes by 2.83%.
That's a lot.
Especially for us that are small business owners, because it's twice as much for us.
It is twice as much for us.
So privatize it and or make a diversified bond portfolio, not treasuries. And guess what? Your problem is solved very quickly, because I can guarantee you over the long term, a diversified bond portfolio will exceed 2.83%. You didn't cut benefits and you didn't raise taxes. People were happy.
And why don't they do that, John?
Because they need tax money so they can take care of all their little pet projects.
Pet projects. That's what they're called.
I'm going to leave it at that.
Yeah.
P squared, but I have a lot of other things I would like to call it. And this wraps it up, because this article ties in completely to, especially when you go on your have a plan tangents. This person asked the internet if it was necessary to save so much for retirement. The response was surprising. I'm thinking maybe because it's a captive audience that there's probably people that are not saving for retirement, aren't planning, don't care about it, aren't going to respond to this type of question. So essentially, this individual put out a scenario. Here's where I'm at. Here's what I'm doing. Do I really need to be saving 12% for retirement? So kudos for the 12%. But the majority of the replies were criticizing him because he assumed perfection, that he's going to earn 6% every year. That's not going to happen. There's nothing there for cushion. They pointed out things like health care, taking care of your parents, all these things that could pop up.
The sandwich generation.
There was no room for variables that could be to the negative. So I was really surprised by the replies that your calculations are figured on perfection. Your kids can, one of our lines, someone stole our line, you can borrow for college, but you can't borrow for retirement. They hammered him on the fact that you assume 6% every year. That just doesn't happen. How does your replanning if you have a 3% year return? So I was pleasantly surprised by the responses to this article. They must listen to our show.
We hope.
That's the only thing I could come up with, is that they're listening to our show and they knew how to respond to this type of question.
But quite frankly, if he's saving 12%, good for him.
Good for him. Needs to be saving more, especially with health care, and especially if Social Security goes away, or if you're paying more in taxes and you have less income.
Well, yeah, the magic number we always talk about, of course, is between 12 and 15%. Is what people need to be putting away throughout their lifetime to accumulate sufficient assets.
Here comes the tangent.
So that when they retire, they have enough money to live another 30 or plus years.
Got to have a plan.
And to accommodate for, I'm getting there, John, and to accommodate for health care, long-term care, a topic we talk about often, and which can put a big dent in retirement. And, of course, medical expenses and whatnot. For those who retire at age 65, it's a 50-50 chance, that they anticipate they're going to spend about $250,000 in health care expenses that are not covered by insurance or Medicare or Medicaid or any other topic. So, and, of course, you have to have a plan. And there are five components to every plan if you want to succeed. It has to be in writing.
Here we go.
You have to have specific time frames, and you have to have specific objectives for the plan. Most importantly, you have to implement the plan, and of course, you have to monitor it. If you do those five steps, studies have showed, going back to the 1950s, and John, I know you don't remember that, but that's okay.
I know you do.
Yeah, well, I do, actually. In the 1950s, a big study at Harvard, go look it up, was done, and you have over a 90% chance of success in anything you do. If you have a plan, you follow those five steps.
And in that plan, I'm sure home ownership comes into play for lots of people.
Absolutely. It's
you
the
like
American,
that segue?
The
did
American
you like
dream.
That? I
that
got
was
you
good.
Off your tangent.
You did good.
Brought it back within the context of the conversation. So Jody wasn't just sitting there going, why am I here?
Yeah. Well, these guys are interesting, but not that interesting.
Now I can see why they have the disclosures and disclaimers.
Yeah.
beginning of the show.
I do understand that. So, Jody, your time's up. No,
I'm done. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, it's been fun.
It was nice being here.
Got some exercise. There you go. So who are your customers?
Well, first-time home buyers.
Not renters.
I love working with first-time home buyers or move-up buyers. There's so many different first-time home buyer programs, grants available, and I love to be able to offer that to clients. So when you hear people say, I'm saving up, but I just don't have the money for a down payment. I wish I could buy. those are the people I love to talk to, because there's chances are they can get into a home for $1,000 if they're eligible for a grant, or there's low down payment. There's no down payment. Both state of Missouri and Illinois, the MHDC, IHDA, the IDA, you'll hear people talk about that. That's Illinois Housing Development Authority. Okay. They have grants available. Right now in the Metro East, like in St. Clair County, Illinois, is a wonderful time to buy a house if you're a first-time home buyer, because they currently have a $7,500 grant if for the people that qualify. They forgive 1/60th of it each month, so after 5 years, it's totally forgiven. And they just recently announced, just a few days ago, an extra $1,500 that they'll give for lower-income clients for their closing costs. So it's a wonderful time to buy.
It's always a wonderful time to buy, in my opinion, but nevertheless.
Right now, for me, it's the most wonderful time of year, but that's completely unrelated.
I understand that. Kids are back at school, right, John? Mm-hmm. So when should I start the process of thinking about, and what should I do, what are the steps in preparing to buy a house if I'm a first-time home buyer?
Well, you can meet with a loan officer, have your credit looked at. A lot of times there's things that you can do to your credit, just paying down a credit card, simple things like that, maybe taking out an additional credit card to improve your score. Because there are some loan programs that are actually credit score will make a difference on their interest rate. So it's always a great idea, you know, maybe even a year before you're thinking about buying a house, just to kind of check your credit out. Definitely 2 or 3 months before you're going to get serious, you want to, again, check the credit, maybe check into different loan programs to know which way you're going to go. Like if you want to put a little bit more money down or go with a low down payment program, that's the first step, is checking out the credit. And then the next step is figuring out what loan program is going to work best for them.
Would you agree? We've talked about before relating to credit that one of the most critical things in terms of first knowing your credit, because people can go out to the internet and check their credit for free through various sources. And once they do that and take a look at where they're at, in knowing that, you know, as you mentioned, reducing their debt to available credit ratio is kind of important. Their ability to pay, not have any late pays, because that'll ding you 20, 30 points on your credit, as we talked about in a prior show. But to do the things, and one of the other big mistakes I've found occasionally, people get ready to buy a house and they're so excited and, you know, they want to go out, they got a great rate and they're being approved and they want to go out and buy furniture and appliances and all kinds of stuff, which they put on, you know, 0% down, 12, you know, 18 months, and all of a sudden they blow up their ratio of debt and they can no longer qualify for a house. So what do you recommend, you know, in terms of those types of things?
Well, when I meet with a client, that's one thing I do talk about, is now is not the time to obtain any new debt. Do not inquire. A lot of times people will call me and they'll say, oh, but there's a special on refrigerators. Oh, there's a special on the bedroom set that I want. And I said, well, you're just more aware of it now. Believe me, in a few weeks, they're going to have the same special. Get it then. You don't want to do any inquiries, because we check their credit right before closing. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a problem. If all of a sudden there's a new debt, then we have to calculate that payment into their debt ratio. And what happens if all of a sudden they're not qualifying anymore for their loan? Big problem.
So the biggest question, or I guess point that I hear, is don't do anything until you talk to a qualified loan officer and get a handle on what you can and can't do and should and shouldn't do.
Right. Because if you are checking your 3 months before you're thinking about buying, which is a good idea, that's when I can counsel somebody and say, oh, wait a minute, you know, your credit is excellent, you're fine, because they might be thinking, oh, I need to pay down this debt before I go forward. And I'll say, no, you're actually fine. You want to keep that money in the bank, because now it's going to look better having more assets. So it's a balance. You know, sometimes I'll say, yes, you definitely want to pay down this one credit card or these two credit cards, but leave the rest alone. Mm-hmm. Maybe they might have an old medical collection on there and they're tempted to pay off that collection. And I'll say, no, Don't do that now. Now's not the time to do that. So it's a fine balance. I want to make sure they have the assets they need, but then I also want to make sure they have the credit score they need to get the best for them.
So in today's market, what is a good credit score?
740 is excellent. Actually, 680 is good. We can do a mortgage loan for somebody with a 580 credit score.
Wow.
Actually, even lower than 580.
Maybe you don't want to, but you could.
But you could. That's when I usually counsel people and say, well, this is what you really need to do. Let's get you up over at least 620 because you'll get a lot better interest rate. And then maybe even 660 to qualify for the grants that are available. You know, so that's when I can kind of do an education to get them where they need to be.
So the extra points make a big difference.
Yes. Even for clients that they come to me and they're like, oh, I have good credit. I have great credit. And their credit score is 672. And it's like, yeah, it's okay. But if we get you over 680, and here's how we'll do it, just pay down this one credit card a little bit, because you'll actually get a little bit better interest rate when you're over 680. So those are the things that it's good to know.
I can't believe 680 is considered good.
Yeah, that's anymore. I know it used to be if you didn't, you didn't have 680 or above, you really couldn't get a mortgage.
No, that part has changed. Obviously, the clients that are over 740 are getting the best. And it's wonderful when you get up in the 800s, but, you know, still the 740 is getting the same as the 800, really, in my view. But yeah, good credit is very important, not only in the mortgage world, but in, you know, insurances and, you know, and everything. So.
Well, it affects everything we do. It affects you, as you mentioned, your insurance rate. They rate by that. A lot of your credit cards, some of them even look at that. So
yes.
I would guess for more information, contact Jody. She'll give her information a little later in the show to counsel you on credit, because as we talk about, even the seniors coming out of SIU or the university, they should have already started on their credit. One credit card, maybe a car loan or apartment or whatnot. Get it going early, because you're going to have it. I hate to see the successful individuals coming out of college with no debt. They figure they're lined up, ready to go for life, and all of a sudden they have no credit and no debt, but they can't buy a car, they can't buy a house, they can't really buy much of anything, because no credit is really not much different than bad credit. So there are things you can do. So you listen to go to our blog at www.thefinancialcafe.us. Look up the blog on credit scores, or give Jody a call and she'll help you personally. So once we get past a credit score and not buying, making emotional purchases at the last minute as they have, tell us about some of the grant programs.
Well, in the state programs like the Illinois Housing Development Authority, MHDC over Missouri, they have programs available, like a grant that's for one of them is forgivable, and there's another one that you do have to pay back, but that can help clients that need the down payment assistance. And there are, credit score requirements. There are income maximums. But sometimes clients are surprised when I say, well, like over in St. Clair County, when I was talking about that $7,500 grant that's available.
That's amazing.
The household for, like, their household of three or more, so a couple with a child, their income has to be under $83,145 a year. I think that's very generous, you know. And a lot of times people are surprised because they think, like, oh, I'm sure I make too much money for that. There's a couple of local grants, like Madison County and St. Clair County, Illinois, both have their own, like, county grant when funds are available. So if a client is not meeting maybe the minimum credit score requirement maybe for the state program, they might qualify for the local grant. So it's good to know, have a lender that you're working with that's knowledgeable about grants available, just to make sure you're getting the max benefit, you know.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It can be a complicated process. So when do I really start looking for a house?
After you meet with a loan officer like myself and we determine what's the best loan program, sometimes I'll tell a client, like, you're ready to go. You know, go go find a house, you know, or I give them a plan like, well, you know, let me repull your credit next month after you do, you know, pay down a credit card or whatever it might be, and then start looking for a house. Because you want to have that pre-approval letter so when you find the house, you're ready to go, you know.
So what does a pre-approval letter do?
A lot of the real estate agents really require that now. They don't want to spend their time, you know, showing houses, driving around. Clients or sellers don't want people going through their house unless they know it's a qualified person. So that piece of paper that says, yes, this person actually is qualified to buy a house, that's important now.
Now, I've heard on commercials and so forth that not every letter is equal, if you will, like pre-approval.
Yeah, there's like a pre-qualification letter or a pre-approval letter. Sometimes when you just talk to someone over the phone and you might run a quick credit report and then just throw out a pre-qualified letter like, yep, sounds good. Where the pre-approval letter, hopefully the loan officer actually asked for some documentation and actually looked at their pay stub and their bank statements, kind of really approve them. We can run it through an automated underwriting system, which actually gives an automated approval. So if it's a pre-approval letter, usually that's what had been done. They actually documented it and ran it through the automated system. So that's a difference.
Prior to 2007, the lending requirements were relaxed, I guess, shall we say?
Yes.
And then we had the bubble, and then we had the burst, and then we had the Great Recession. And then we've been told that the free money, if you will, or the easy, you know, anyone can go get a house has changed. Is there truth to that?
Very much so. Yeah, it really tightened up. It got really tough to buy a house, and sometimes even the common sense things, like this person has great credit and has money in the bank, but yet we can't give that person a loan because their debt ratio was a little too high. Well, it's like, well, they could pay cash for the house, you know. So sometimes it didn't make sense that it got that tight. Mm-hmm. But it's a good thing, you know. In part, it was a good thing, you know. But now it's starting to ease up a little bit. There's some programs coming back. FHA, a lot of times you'll hear that the Federal Housing Authority, FHA loans, more lenient. Those are the ones that do that 580 credit score. Because sometimes bad things happen and the score was bad, but they have the income and the assets. Otherwise, they are a good home buyer. So FHA filled a need for that. And now Fannie Mae and a lot of the other loan programs are starting to ease up on some issues. Our requirements, I should say. We've got, you know, like Fannie Mae came out with a 3% down program where FHA was 3.5% down. And then all of a sudden there's even a 1% down program. You know, it's all of a sudden, and there's USDA, which is for rural development loans. If you're buying in a rural area, and I'm not meaning buy a farm, but like, you know, just like in Monroe County, like all of that's a rural area. Going out to like Highland and Freeburg, Smithton, you know, just moving out to rural areas, you can get a no money down loan with the monthly mortgage insurance is discounted also, which is an excellent loan program. So a lot of these programs are coming back and they're easing up a little bit on their requirements, making it a little bit easier now to buy a home.
Is it still true that there are any concessions made, specifically when credit scores are lower, when it becomes apparent through the underwriting process that the biggest cause of that is a medical expense?
Yes.
Because I know the doctors, the hospitals and whatnot, there are a lot of disputes, particularly with, as we are so fond of Obamacare right now. But, you know, people can really nail their credit by not paying medical bills on time. And is that a concession that an underwriter can take?
Yes, or? Definitely. Okay. And that's changed. It used to be medical collections, you know, really would hurt the score. And mm-hmm. And that's even starting to change now in the industry.
So they can. I mean, it would have to, because I certainly, if I'm in a dispute with a medical bill, I'm not going to pay expecting to get reimbursed. So it hangs out there. Mm-hmm. And we've had issues with four kids. Yeah, you come across all kinds of stuff. But so yeah, I didn't even think about that as far as dinging you while it's still in necessarily court, but in limbo.
In limbo, yeah, which can go on for months or years, literally. And I think that is a number one cause of bad credit scores, mm-hmm. is their medical expenses that are in dispute, as it were. So let's talk a little bit about the documentation. When I go to see you, what do I need to bring in with me?
Usually we ask for the last 2 years' W-2s and a month worth of pay stubs. And
so do I need every W-2 or just the year-end summary?
Every W-2 that you have.
Okay.
So if you have multiple jobs, it would be all your W-2s, okay. Just the W-2s. Now for self-employed people.
There we go.
Obviously, then we need tax returns.
Yeah.
Then we would need the last 2 years' tax returns if you're self-employed. So different loan programs have different requirements. There are some that actually want the tax returns, where we're okay with just getting a W-2 for a W-2 employee. And then pay stubs and bank statements. Mm-hmm. Then obviously, you know, if there was a divorce involved or child support, then we might ask for more documentation regarding that documentation, you know.
So how helpful do you find when someone actually has completed accurately a financial statement?
That's a good thing.
It's unusual, isn't it? Yeah.
like what? People do that? No. For self-employed people, that becomes a must. But for the average person that's a W-2 employee, really, they just come in with a W-2 and a paycheck, and then I have a discussion with them. How long were you going to be in the house? You know, there's different things that come into play when deciding what loan program is the best for them.
And they're going to have to bring in some documentation of potentially debt. You know, what they're having to pay if they have credit card debt or they have other.
We get that actually off the credit report.
Okay,
we pull
the credit report.
So yeah, okay. We try to make it easy. Over the course, when the underwriter looks at the file, sometimes they might ask for additional documentation on explaining things like, oh, what's this address that showed up on your credit report? Well, why is your driver's license address different than your W-2 address? You know, so they really question things and ask for explanations.
P.O. boxes don't work.
Yeah, P.O. boxes do not work.
We'll just say explain that.
Yeah, what are some of the biggest mistakes you see people make? Other than buying too much house or trying to buy too much house?
Well,
I see a lot of people are house poor.
Yeah. Sometimes I question people. You know, I'll have clients that are very, very low income on a fixed Social Security income that have been renting, and they say they want to buy a house. And so I question them, why? You know, you do realize that a few years from now, if there's a problem with the roof or a problem with the heating and cooling, you know, it's all on you. You can't call somebody. So that's a mistake.
I do miss renting for that.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
tell
that's
me about
a mistake
it.
That I try to, you know, really, I want to be comfortable that they know what they're doing.
So it's not always the American dream.
Right. You know, and that's what we have to, you know, it's up to that client because, you know, they might have, a family member that's going to move in with them and help them, you know. So sometimes it does make sense. Like, oh, you know, like when you first look at it on paper, it's like, are you sure you want to buy a house? Because even though your debt ratio is okay, you know, you are, you know, kind of a fixed income. And I worry, you know, you don't have a lot of assets or, you know, so that's when I question it. And then I have to, sometimes I take it the next step. I just want to feel comfortable that they know what they're doing, you know.
It's still a dream. It's just a nightmare, Larry.
Yeah, sometimes.
Like our money pit house.
Yeah, they do. They do draw a lot of that. So basically, the individuals really should do a budget.
Mm-hmm.
Another one of the planning points.
Here it comes again.
Gotta have a budget.
Hang on, folks. We're going on a tangent.
Tangentially speaking, I still don't know if that's a word, but it works for me. So. But yeah, having a budget, a financial statement is a good thing to have. And I know recently, well, in the last year or two, it was interesting talking with some of the folks we know in the industry. And you know, I had supplied financial statements on some refinancing I was doing. And they're like, you know, you're one of the few people that knows how to fill these things out right. They rarely get a financial statement that is accurately completed. So it can be done. So if you have a good financial advisor, they could help you do that. And you may want to do your budget, because that's one of the things that we need for our plan for retirement. How much money are you spending today? Factor in inflation. We'll determine what you're going to need 20, 30 years down the road, and make sure that you're putting that money away. Because it's not always the best to put all your money into a house either. Sorry. But, you know, you have to plan for retirement. As John fondly says, you know, you can't borrow money for retirement. It doesn't work very well that way.
Yeah, not many banks, lend on that preface. What I find different as, you know, from when I first started in this career to now is a change in mentality. Even for me, mentally, I want the house paid off when I retire. But I see a lot of people now carrying debt. You know, carrying a mortgage into retirement, and that just, to me, kind of seems illogical, but it seems to be nowadays that that's pretty common, where, at least like my parents, they, their house was paid off when they retired, but that approach or goal doesn't seem to exist anymore.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think as long as they know that they'll have the income, you know, if they can invest that money, you know, especially now with interest rates low, if you can get an interest rate that's maybe 3 point something, you know, and your investments are doing well, you know, then why not keep that mortgage, you know?
The cost of carry, we've had that discussion before on this show.
Amazing.
I know. We're good, Larry. We're good.
Yeah, I tell you. We're ahead of the game. Ahead of the game, John.
So what are some of the rates we have now? What's going on?
Interest rates are still wonderful, you know, 3 point something, 4 point something, you know, in the threes and fours, I think is still good.
Especially historical terms.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, when I was in studying, they talked about rates back then that were in the double digits.
Yeah, I know where you're going, John.
Well, I remember my first mortgage was 10.25, and it was a 3-year adjustable. And so I remember getting so excited when I got to a 9.9 fixed rate. So nowadays when clients come in and they're like, I don't know, 4.5 seems kind of high. It's like, really?
Yeah.
It's like, I'll tell you, hi, my 9.99, I'll always remember that one for my first mortgage.
It's interesting. I think everybody does. You know, I guess it's such a monumental event. Because I know when we did our first mortgage in 76, it was like 8.5, and we thought it was wonderful because it wasn't long after that, as John alluded to, in the early 80s, the mid 80s, you know, you were talking 10, 12, 14% for a mortgage, and we were we got a half.
76?
Huh?
You had a mortgage in 1976?
I had a mortgage. I built a house in 1976, John. Wow. Sorry.
I think I was still in diapers.
You probably were. you didn't have any hair then either.
Actually, when I was born, I came out with a full head of black hair, and my mom showed pictures to prove it. But yeah, you know, like I said, I went in the military, they shaved my head, and it never grew back.
That was that.
I think I have a lawsuit. If only I could sue the government.
Yeah, good luck with that. So, you know, the premise back then, I will reminisce to that extent, but if you didn't have 20% down, you didn't get a loan. And I maybe call me old fashioned, but I don't think
take away the fashion part.
That's a bad thing, because if you have more down, 5%, 10%, 20% down, you know, it shows not only a commitment, but it does certainly help in terms of the payments going forward. And the lending institution has a lot less risk. So I think in the later 80s, when the government went crazy and said everybody needs to buy a house. And
the loans are going out at 105%.
They gave them away. People couldn't afford them, and that's, you know, the housing bust ensued past that. But if you have more than 1 or 2 or 5% down, whatever it is, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing.
Correct. It's not a bad thing. Clients that have 20% down, then they're avoiding the mortgage insurance premiums,
I hear some commercials saying we can get rid of PMI. Do you have to have 20% down to not have?
Technically, yes, because a lot of times we can charge a higher interest rate and then do what's called lender paid PMI. You know, so There's single premium mortgage insurance.
Tomato,
so there's
tomato.
There's a way to get out of that monthly mortgage insurance and not have 20% down, but you somehow paid it, you know?
Okay. So that's, okay.
Yeah. And talking about like interest rates, like the difference between like the interest rate and the APR or the annual percentage rate, the main difference is the interest rate calculates the actual monthly payment. And then the APR calculates the total cost of the loan. So once you've identified what's the best loan program for me, then that's when you can actually start comparing rates, maybe with different lenders. But you almost have to know your credit score, what loan program, what term, how much down payment. You really need all those factors to know, to really even ask, what's your rate? You know, because it's like, what's my rate on what? You know, I need to know specifics. And then once you are comparing the certain loan program at, say, one, like a rate that you were given maybe by one lender of, say, 3.75, if you call another lender and they say 3.875, you don't want to just automatically dismiss that. You want to say, well, wait a minute, well, what about 3.75? You want to compare apples to apple. And then that's when you would ask the APR, because then that takes the total cost, like what fees they had to pay to get that interest rate. So that's basically how you rate shop.
A lot of these commercials I hear with no closing costs, no PMI, and so forth, it's just getting wrapped up in the interest
into the rate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't pay it up front, you just pay it forever. I think that's misleading advertising, quite frankly, but you know, nobody asked me. You know, when they're advertising at 2.8, 2.9, maybe they're not even today, but 3% rate, but your annual percentage rate is 3.9. It's like, okay, where's that other percent go? And that's the closing cost, and that's the rest of the premium, I guess, your points. I don't know. They still
Correct.
Call points?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It's the points that you're paying for the privilege of borrowing money, which I never figured out. But
I would think if you're going in and then you're rolling up the closing costs and not getting a good down payment, so forth, you're really not in position to buy a house.
That would be my financial opinion.
Which does not represent the radio station.
Or anybody else, right.
Anybody else with the same mind. Okay. But no, I would have to agree with you, so I'll represent with you.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I it's all about what is practical, and we get back to the budget and the financial plan. That's fine if you do qualify and you get this rate for, you know, 15, 20 year, 30 year, whatever mortgage. It does that factor in? Because again, as Jody mentioned, you know, well, what about when, you know, how old's the roof if you're buying an existing home? When is it going to have to be replaced? Or what about the appliances or the heating system or whatnot? It's not unusual that you need to budget, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 a year just to take care of miscellaneous stuff. And if that's not something that you can build into your budget, then you're maybe buying a little too much house, or maybe not quite ready to go out and buy a house at this particular point in time. So,
and folks, I will say it is not all that it's cracked up to be. We bought our house 13, 14 years ago, and I still remember our landlord's name when we rented down in Belleville, and I missed on.
Yeah,
the upkeep. I mean, you got to factor annual maintenance that goes into your house. Mm-hmm. We bought our house in, I think it was like September. That December, January, we had the coldest day of the year hit, and that's when our furnace went out, and my wife was pregnant. That was good times, folks.
Yeah, that sounds about, isn't it? Murphy's Law.
It's so about, he's like, I'm going to the mall where it's warm, and you're going to figure this out.
Yeah, get the furnace working again, John. Now.
Yeah. And what do you know about the home warranties? And when we bought our house, it came with a warranty, and every time something went, there was always seems to be a clause that, well, we can't pay that. I don't see the value in those. Am I wrong? Right? Just.
What do you think, Jody?
Well. My husband and I, we're not big buy the warranty type of people, because you're exactly right. It just seems like whatever goes wrong and you want to use it, then all of a sudden it's like, well, actually, which actually happened to my son. He purchased a home that was a foreclosure. So he decided to buy a home warranty, and then he ended up using it on the hot water heater when it went out. But of course, there was a clause, like with the hot water heaters, They ended up paying maybe half of it. I think he was under the impression it would cover it all, but it didn't.
If your hot water heater broke because of a water-related issue, it's not covered.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure there's some warranties that are better than others, and I'm sure it's just do your homework and find out what you're getting and what's covered, because I'm sure there's sometimes when there's stories where it was wonderful,
Now, do you guys, you hear these commercials too about, we're running this special on this program or that program. Do you guys have that, or is it just kind of it is what it is?
I wouldn't say that we actually, we run specials. I would say it's special every day, at New American Funding,
She's in sales.
Got that in there.
Now, what do you guys do for military?
VA loans, veterans. We do VA loans. No money down, no monthly mortgage insurance. There is a funding fee, that is financed in with a loan, though.
And then how do the VA loan, how do they work for our military listeners and me?
Well, the VA, it works basically like any other mortgage loan. It's just that what's nice about we can offer is no money down. The funding fee is actually discounted if they do put 5% down or 10% down. So there is an advantage to going ahead and putting 5 or 10% down because the cost is less. But that's something I'll evaluate with a client. If they come in and they say, I'm going to put 20% down, credit is good, and I'm VA eligible, so I was going to use my VA. And I was like, so then I'll compare the interest rates on a conventional 30-year fix versus the VA and say, maybe we'll just go conventional. You're putting 20% down. You really don't need that benefit of the no money down .
Okay.
Because you're not going to have monthly mortgage insurance if you're putting 20% down on the conventional. So with any other loan program, we evaluate what's really best for the client.
So you present them with options to consider and explain how they all work.
Yeah. That's whenever great. Anybody tells me this is what I want, I always ask some questions and determine, is it really what you want? Because you don't know what you don't know,
I heard that before?
I don't know.
Many shows, yeah. It sounds like another show coming up for homeowner warranties, John. Maybe we find somebody who does those. Jody, I agree with you. I'm not a big fan of warranties because it seems as though whenever I buy an extended warranty on anything, it breaks the day after it expires.
There's truth to that. And nowadays, we are in such a disposable.
Oh, it's terrible.
Product, disposable economy. And I agree. I mean, I think they make these phones last until your contract. My wife has a phone. I think her contract is coming up soon, and now it's starting to come up with some issues. My phone, right after the contract expired, the phone just almost fell apart in my hands. You use it, you throw it away, and you get another one. There isn't it almost costs more sometimes to have repairs done than to buy a new one.
No doubt about that. And I think actually it's a conspiracy, John, because, when they do those software updates, they actually download, failure software. So, when the warranty's up,
new products come out. It's got bugs built in, so you have to then call the help desk and buy a patch, and here we go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I'm on that conspiracy soapbox. You don't have to.
Yeah.
You don't have to ask me to join you on that, Larry.
I know you are.
Well, something different from home warranty is the home inspection. A lot of times people get confused when buying a house because the lender is going to order an appraisal. And on some loan programs, the appraiser has to determine whether it's meeting minimum property standards, because there's some loan programs, government loan programs, that the house does have to, heating, cooling, roof, flooring.
Needs all those. It does have to
meet minimum property standards, meaning be satisfactory. But the home inspection is a whole lot more thorough. So whenever anybody is purchasing a home, I do recommend, they're not required, but we do recommend hiring a professional inspector to inspect that home. And then the home warranty is something totally different. That's an insurance, But so there's a lot of different components when buying a house.
Yeah, I call our house the money pit, and there's many examples and reasons why that is so true. One of them, when we bought the house at the time, a home inspection was not required. Now it is required, and I'm like, great, so I didn't have to...
Well, Well, it's not required, but we still recommend it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's all my clients, I think, get a home inspection. I think the real estate agents and everybody are like, get a home inspection. Yeah. You want a detailed report.
But those minimum standards weren't. So what I'm facing is on the way going out that there's probably going to have to be some upgrades and so forth done that were not required when I bought the house.
Mm.
No doubt about that. And I guess on home inspections, the same thing. There's good, there's bad, and there's ugly, because I have seen personally a number of home inspectors and inspections that occurred, and I subsequently took a look at the properties myself and found a lot of things that they didn't bother to mention.
If they don't get out of the car, that's a good sign. That's probably a problem.
Yeah, but they, you know, I just sometimes wonder, you know, if they have their list and they sample. I don't know how they do it. Maybe that's another show. Talk to some home inspectors.
I'm going to start writing these down.
There's two shows there, John. But, yeah, the home inspectors, I think, leave, in some cases, not all, leave something to be desired because it seems somewhat superficial, I think, in a lot of cases, and maybe doesn't dig in. Oh, it's a good thing. I think you need it, particularly for the buyer who is not so oriented to knowing electrical, plumbing, mechanical, structural issues that could prevent some problems. But I know one example recently that I had seen a property we were looking at, and the inspector looked at it and said, yeah, everything's great. And I looked at it and went, no way. He missed so many things. But anyway, I digress. Another tangent.
That's good. No. I know. How are we doing on time, sir?
We are down to 9 minutes.
9 minutes.
And counting.
And counting.
So what haven't we asked you, Jody? What would you like to say?
I have a question. Oh, I have one here. What are some of the, we may have asked it and then got it stuck on a tangent somewhere, but what are some of the biggest mistakes you see people make?
Well, big mistakes would be maybe not having a home inspection or ignoring things. You know, like maybe you saw something that might appear structural wrong with
water
the house.
Water damage.
But they loved that, you know, master bathroom so much. You know, sometimes people get emotional and they just have have this house and they'll ignore
show more often.
So they'll ignore something that is a big red flag, but they at the time they're like, I think I'm going to ignore this red flag because this house is so awesome, you know? And then when they're in the house, then they have to deal with that big red flag that they had. And then they find out, you know, I guess we shouldn't have bought this house. You know, it's, you know, so that's a big, big mistake that hopefully people will avoid.
Thanks for bringing my life into your example.
All right, John, I'll let you take that one.
Yes. And folks, we have mentioned that before. Any financial decision based on emotion will most always be wrong.
Yeah. I remember years ago, I actually had a client that left my office crying because I couldn't fix it. You know, she was wanting to, she had this house built. It was very emotional. She loved this house. She had to buy this house. But then looking at her income, it's like, you cannot afford this house. Your debt ratio is over 50%. I mean,
ouch.
It was way over, you know, it was just like, you cannot afford it, you know, but she wanted it so bad, you know, and she was crying like, I gotta buy this house. I'm like, no, you just can't, you know, it's just, you know, so that's another thing. Again, emotions are in it. It's like they love it so much they want it. But but it's like, but, you know, this is a big commitment and you don't want to be eating, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for the rest of your life because you can't afford to even go out to dinner at a restaurant. You know, you have to take the whole budget and really, you know, avoid that mistake, too. Again, it's all about emotions, you know.
I remember the ramen noodle diet. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So we ask all of our guests when they come on board, your funniest stories, something that you've had in your past that you still to this day will laugh about.
Let me see. The funny stories. Oh, my goodness. One thing I'll remember is back at the bank, and it's not like it really happened to me, but it happened to another loan officer.
Sure, we'll go with that.
But I still laugh about it. It's like, the client walked in with blank tax returns and said, just fill in whatever numbers you need to make this work. And my coworker was like, no, that's not how this works. So
and I got this big thing of pile of cash over here that I need to deposit.
Back to that $1 million bill.
And then this other lady walked in and said, I want a mortgage, but I do not want any PMS on my loan. I'm like, you mean PMI, right?
No, she meant PMS. Oh, and a great
TMI. I just said one story.
Oh, that was great.
Well, why don't you share your particulars with the people so they know where to contact you, reach you? Because I like the fact that you present options, you give them the information that they need to make an informed decision, not an emotional decision. And I'm sure they would like, some people out there would like to have your.
Well, my office is located in Swansea, Illinois at 221 West Point Center, and my phone number is 618-719-3695, and that's my cell phone. I try to be very flexible, meeting clients, you know, when they get off work, maybe even on a Saturday. I do a lot on the phone, you can apply online on a website. So I try to be very flexible, you know, to make it convenient for the client. I always say the first step is just giving me a call, because a lot of times I can take a lot of information over the phone and we can have a phone conversation and get it done on a evening or a Saturday afternoon when you're not at work. So again, it's 618-719-3695.
I think give her a call, because regardless if you're talking about, we didn't get into specifics on refinancing, but I think there still are some refinancing opportunities out there. She can help you determine if that's in your best interest or not as you go forward. But I guess the real keys out of the discussion that I got is start early, try and keep emotion out of the deal and work from the numbers, have a budget. Financial statement, if possible. Good credit score is always good. And once you get that letter of approval, then you can go out and start looking for a home. And I think the biggest thing is keeping emotion out of it, because looking for a home is probably one of the biggest purchases most people make in their lifetimes. And it's something that you likely are going to be stuck with for good or for bad.
Yeah, our five-year house is now. Almost 14 years.
Yeah, that's the way it works. So, you know, do your homework, do it up front. You know, have a plan, back to that, and it will be a successful experience. If you don't understand it, you know, have someone explain it or help you understand it. Read the documents, you know, as we always jokingly say, it's like buying a house. You know, sign here, sign here, sign here, and 30 pages later, you're still signing something. But you can read them, you know, avoid prepayment penalties, just some things I'm thinking of as you look through that stuff. Make sure you have flexibility in terms of that. You know, I tend to stay away from adjustable rate mortgages,
right?
Because you don't know what's going to happen.
They never adjust in your favor.
They never, ever, ever adjust in your favor. So make sure that it fits with your situation to have a happy and successful future down the road. So. We appreciate you coming in, Jody. It's been fun.
Thank you for having
me. Hopefully, we've helped some of our listeners to get a better handle on the mortgage industry. It's ever-changing, something that we all deal with, unless you're a renter for life, somewhere along the way.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. Not at all. It just depends on individuals' particular situations. I have clients who that's all they do. Because of the nature of their work, they never know where they're going to be. They may be in Washington for a year or two and the West Coast for a year or two, and it just doesn't make sense to get into all the costs of buying a home, so they perpetually rent. So a couple of thoughts, Joe. John, you talked about earlier, but you know, you shouldn't worry about the world coming to an end today because it's already tomorrow in Australia.
Okay. So move to Australia is what you're saying.
Well, you could, you know, and remember the early bird gets the worm, but the second mouse gets the cheese. All right, where's your story?
Well, my story, and we were talking about this, and if anyone has this answer to this question, email us at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or llexo@nickelfinancial.com. Our website is www.thefinancialcafe.us. And I have a man here who tried to deposit a $1 million bill.
That's a lot of zeros.
My question is, what is the highest denomination bill that our wonderful Treasury Department prints? I do not know the answer to it. I guess 10,000. But if anyone has the answer, please shoot the answer to either Larry or myself. But anyway, an Iowa man was arrested after police allegedly found him carrying meth as he tried to deposit a $1 million bill into his bank account. Now, I'm surprised that someone who deals meth actually had a bank account, but hey, I won't mention his name. He was 33 years old, attempted to deposit the bill, which he said was worth $1 million. So I think he was sampling his product.
A little too often, I think, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. But this was in Sioux City, Iowa. A $1 million bill.
Well, they have those in Iowa.
They do.
Yeah, they must, I'm sure. He had one. So
I know our song says, if I had $1 million.
That's right.
But it doesn't say if I had $1 million bill.
We'll go with that. Thanks again to the Chef Shop, Nancy and Scott Snyder. Wonderful people. Stop by if you haven't been there recently. You'll find lots of good stuff. The fudge, the popcorn, the coffee, of course. We all love to sample that. Mm. Thanks to WSIE 88.7 FM, The Sound, here on the beautiful campus of Southern Illinois University in Edwardsville. And we are the Financial Cafe. If you have questions, you have Jody's contact information, give her a phone call. She'd be happy to help answer any questions about mortgages. And we will be back. Happy fall. We're almost there. We'll be back again next week. So have a great week. Say goodbye, John.
Goodbye, John.
You've been listening to the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at llexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to the Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.